Culture eats strategy for lunch, and informed cultures drive decisions and inspire action. At the Data Culture Podcast, we talk with execs, visionaries, and data experts so that you may move from idea to outcome in your own data culture journey. Welcome to the Data Culture Podcast. My name is Sid Atkinson, data culture innovator and consulting leader with over 21 years in data. With us today is Summer Shao. She is the deputy CIO of the City of Houston. Welcome.
Thank you, Sid. Very happy to be here on this podcast.
And Summer, you have had a very big journey in the tech space. So if you don't mind, walk us through both a little bit on where you are today with the City of Houston as deputy director or deputy CIO. That's a big title. There's a whole lot under your purview. So tell us a little bit about where you are today in the City of Houston, and then we'll get into your key insights on leadership that you're here to discuss today.
Okay, so my role at the City of Houston is the Deputy CIO over Enterprise Application and the Project Management Office. And I like to tell people we support all the critical systems at the city from 311 calls to 911 calls. What I kind of coined as from trash to crash.
Okay.
Yeah, and everything in between trash to crash. Our team support the systems that make sure your calls are taken, make sure, you know, firefighters get paid, make sure police officers get paid. And I also run the PMO group. The PMO group runs all applications and infrastructure projects at the City of Houston. So I'm very quite proud of our team and the things we accomplish each day. Like I said, from trash to crash and everything in between. Yep.
And just, I know most people in the United States know like Houston's a big city, but just to put this in context, like Houston, the latest census stats, you're like fourth largest in the country. And then we start to include the metro area. It's massive. The GDP of Houston alone dwarfs many countries, right? So this is no small potatoes that we're talking about. This is very large systems. There's how many different departments in the City of Houston that are under your purview?
So there's 24 departments total. We support 21 of them. We have, don't quote me on this, but we have federated departments also, but we support a majority. We are the central IT. And if you put Houston, like the easy comparison is if Houston was a state, we'd be in the middle of the states.
Yeah.
I think we'd be like the 24th or the 25th state. We're larger than half the state and smaller than the other half of the state. That's how big Houston actually
is. Yeah. It's a near $500 billion a year GDP. It's huge.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So lots of things that are under your watch and what you and the city help with. So now I think the awesome thing that you're here to talk to us, and I'm very grateful that you're going to share a personal journey, right? Talking about, and I love the title, From I to We, on your views and insights into leadership. So I think, Summer, if you don't mind, tease us with the five key takeaways. And then before we dive into the details, let's go a little bit on your background that helped you get those insights. So what are those five or you could start with, you have a definition of leadership and then the five key takeaways.
Okay, so I think the definition of leadership to me, most people think is you have to have people reporting to you. Mm-hmm. You have to have a formal title. You're doing people's reviews. But actually, anyone can be a leader. Mm-hmm. A leader is someone who decides wherever they are to influence others to achieve a collective goal. That's my definition of leadership. You know, you can have student leaders, right? Mm-hmm. Like you can be in school and you can have a bunch of elementary kids playing on the playground. But, you know, there's always that one gal or one guy that says, this is what we're going to do. You're going to do this. You're going to do that. We're going to play this. We're going to play that. This is how we're going to get from here to there. Mm-hmm. Right? That's a leader on the playground.
Yeah.
Right? So, and in my mind, it is people who use their influence to help a group of people to achieve a collective goal. That's my definition of leadership.
Yes. And when you and I were talking leading up to this, that was a big mind shift for you going from personal excellence to a group excellence. So let's tease out then like the five, run us through your five key takeaways that you've got.
Okay.
And then we'll talk a little bit about your journey to even beginning to have those insights?
Yeah. So I think my five key takeaway, one is I went from a doer to a facilitator, right? I went from the person that I thought had all the solutions to, I joke about in my team, I don't have solutions. I just have problems. That's my first takeaway. The second takeaway is, as a high achieving individual, I really cared about how I was viewed by others and how I was judged by others. And we all want to say, hey, we don't care about that. We don't care what people think about us. Not necessarily true.
Yeah.
Every day I care a little less, but I still care. It went from me caring a lot about my own performance to realizing the true reflection of my performance as a leader is I'm being judged by my team's performance, right? So that's the second takeaway, is you're judged by the performance of your team once you're a leader, right? And the third takeaway is the success and failure of any effort or initiative project doesn't depend on one person alone, doesn't depend on me alone. It's a collective team effort. The bigger they are, the bigger the team you'll right? My fourth takeaway is people problems need root cause analysis too. We're going to do a RCA on people problems before we try to solve them. And that was an enlightening takeaway. And now I approach people problems differently since then. And my fifth one is leadership is actually theater, right? Mm-hmm. It's not only one person being in the spotlight all the time. It's making sure everybody has their place and you can orchestrate a whole production.
Awesome. So love those. Now, before we dig into those, Summer, you had several different career paths or several different steps in your career before being deputy CIO. So walk us through those key, obviously we don't want to do an exhaustive, like relay every bit, but what are some of those key transitions? You mentioned that there's a journey on the mindset shift. So you can mention some of those key pieces and steps in your career that helped you with that mindset.
Yeah, I think the first thing I want to mention is that I grew up in China. I moved to the U.S. when I was in fifth grade, around 10, 11 years old. And the first time I was introduced to a team project and small group learning, I was shocked.
Yeah.
Because China is very much an individualist education, right? You listen to what the teacher says, you take a test, and your score are public. And they will rank you, like literally everybody scores a paste it on the back of the door type. And they rank you by your own performance. So when I came to the US, I think my first group project was probably in middle school. The teacher was like, well, you five have to go and come up with a presentation together. And that was when I remember a visceral reaction of, I can't control what these people do. I don't want to do this. Like, how a team of people working together? And I will say that, you know, that mindset carried out through my entire educational career. Even in college, I was like, here we go. I'm gonna have to work with people to make this work. Like, what if people don't do their work? So when I started out my professional career, I started out as a consultant. And I was just thinking about this. In consulting, even though you work in teams, there is a very much an individual aspect to that in that way that you are judged on your billable rate. It's not your team's collective utilization, right? Like, your utilization is being looked at on a daily basis, right? It's how much did you bill? What is your billing rate, right? And to some degree is which client likes you and which client doesn't like you, right? It's not all that. There's a lot of teamwork in consulting for sure as we mature. But at the beginning of your career, at the beginning of my career, it was very individualistic. You were almost competing with your team members in some way that were your same level. I remember this one thing really vividly that at one point in my consulting career, the firm that I had worked for had decided that everybody needed to have a certain utilization, which was okay. But if you weren't utilized, you only had 40 training hours, like every 6 months. And so it led to a point where people were reluctant to help other people. Because if I pulled a consultant and I said, hey, can you please go help XYZ? They're struggling. They would say, but Summer, I don't even have billable hours to do that. I don't have training hours to bill. Yes, right? So consulting for me, at least in my experience, was a very individualist thing. Mm-hmm. I'm sure we were pulled into a team, but there was underlying competition to that. So when I moved into corporate America, I kept with that mindset, mm-hmm. right? Like individual achieving, like I'm going to do all this. I'm going to be the best on the team. I'm going to make sure my customers like me the most. I'm going to make sure I have the most billable hours, right? There was a lot of I'm going to solve this. And as I progress in my career, the teams that I was involved that got bigger and bigger, I realized, you know, I can't do that.
Yeah.
That's not successful or sustainable. So that's, I think, where it led to a lot of these insights that in order to do bigger things and better things, you have to switch the I to the we.
Yeah. And it's not just on like your personal mindset too. I think a little bit of what you, or two things you mentioned there, you can see culture and systems like set up that individualistic mindsets as well. Like the individual competition and ranking that you had. So that's not necessarily, that individualistic pursuit wasn't necessarily summer, or it could not necessarily innate in summer, but you became a product of the environment you were put in. And yes. Having now worked at several different consulting companies, like what you mentioned is true generally of the consulting field. It's not true of all consulting companies, but you have to very intentionally set up a culture where that, what you mentioned, doesn't happen, right? You have to, so now you start to set up this playground here very neatly, where it's like that every step so far, you've been very rewarded outside of the middle school projects, but.
Only because I eventually just, you know, whomever didn't do their part,
I just did their part anyway. You did their part anyway, but.
Which is a learning now, like can't keep on.
At some point that doesn't work anymore. So, but. You set the field really well, where we understand like your rewards so far for very individualistic performance. So now you wrote down your first one from doer to leader facilitator, which is probably like one of your first transitions, mindset transitions. Okay. So what does that mean to you? Like, how did that mindset shift happen from doer to leader facilitator?
Yeah. So in my heart of heart, I tell everyone, people are like, what do you do? We all have our backgrounds, mm-hmm. right? Even in IT. In my heart of heart, I am a project manager. Like, okay. I love applications. I love innovation. I love technology. I love how to utilize them. But in my heart of heart, I am a girl with a to-do list, mm-hmm. and we're going to check it off, right? And just a little bit of story. I have a very high performing project manager on my team right mm-hmm. now, and she's leading a very large project.
Okay.
And it is quite stressful. Mm. And, you know, I think it was like a while back, she was like, I don't think we have everything on the schedule. Mm. I think we have items that are not scheduled. And keep in mind, this project has three other PMs.
Yeah, so it's big.
She's a lead along with somebody else from the vendor side, and she has a junior PM, and the vendor has it. The PMO is consisted of four people plus me and the vendor. So there's six of us who are highly competent, have PM backgrounds, right? But she is still very concerned. She's like, not everything's on the schedule. You know, we need to put every open item on the schedule. We need to do this and that. Mm-hmm. So I had to tell her, hey, step back a little bit, mm-hmm. right? You're providing all the solutions, which is what I would have done a few years ago.
Yeah.
And said, how about we go into our PMO sync up meetings and let's ask questions. Mm. She's like, what questions? What are you talking about? I said, ask, hey, do we know what our outstanding open items we have? I hope we do. Mm-hmm. And how do we get them on the schedule, mm-hmm. right? But more importantly, like, why do we need to get them on the schedule? And why are they not on the schedule right now, right? And she was like, these are like basic questions, right? And I think they're obvious. But a lot of time facilitating as a leader, it's just asking the most obvious questions that leads people back to the discipline and the foundation, mm-hmm. right? And so instead of saying, oh, we're missing items on the, you know, schedule, let's put these in. These are the five that are missing. Somebody go write it in the PMP.
Mm-hmm.
She did go into the meeting and say, hey, where are the missing items? And it leads really highly professional people to think about, oh, not that they didn't know they didn't need to put the items on the schedule, mm-hmm. but maybe we got overwhelmed. Maybe we just missed out our discipline, right? Yeah. So it's the shift from giving everybody the solutions to having everyone think about what needs to be done next. As common as it is, like, because common sense sometimes is not common, especially under pressure.
It is. Well, I think that's, and what you're mentioning there too, sometimes a different interpretation can be the leader making space by being the first to ask the basic or sometimes the dumb question, right? Because everybody's like, don't want to ask that because it's very obvious. We all know that, right? I'm looking at you. You know that. Yeah, I know that. You know that. So and so nobody wants to ask because they don't want to look foolish. But then the leader is okay being the one that she might ask what feels like the obvious question. And then it opens it up and creates a space for everybody else to participate. So now I love that analogy or love that story.
And the surprising thing about the leader asking, and everybody can ask those questions. If you ask those questions, you're the leader of the group at that point, right? And that's okay. And that's why I encourage everyone on our team to do that. But it also, what is more surprising when we do that process is those obvious questions come sometimes with unobvious answers. Mm-hmm. Because you ask those obvious questions, a lot of time, you know, you're like, oh, everybody has the same answer, or I have the answer, I just don't want to share it. But somebody will come up with a unobvious answer that is a way better answer than what you have thought. That is why I like to make the space, like you said, sit and ask those questions.
Awesome. Yeah. So the other thing that is, and again, but love the titles for, so from I to we. So your second key point for folks to take away. So we went from doer to leader facilitators, point one. Point two, shifting from self-evaluation to team performance. So walk us through what that means, like that both your shift and your thinking there. And then what does that mean to you?
So what it means to me in the core at two things. One is I was very much, like I said in the beginning, and it's just my personality. Lots of people, I think, have this personality. Yeah. I was definitely a people pleaser. Mm-hmm. And my two motivations of performing well is I want people to not be disappointed in me. Mm-hmm. And the two is I think there's a lot of insecurities of not having control. So, and this reflected a lot when I was an individual contributor, right? Like, I definitely was somebody who was overachieving, cared about my reviews, right? Like, it was a very young age. Like, we don't get B's, right? Like, A's are the only thing we can get. Yeah. Like, and that was taught to me in my culture. Mm-hmm. I was a product of my culture, but I was also I bought into it.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people don't buy, I bought into it, and I was intrinsically just that way. And I don't remember the specific, but one morning, I think I sat in my office and I was like quite proud of myself that I got something done. Mm-hmm. It was kind of hard. Whether it was a report or a presentation or I solved a really big problem, mm-hmm. I sat there. I was like, oh, this is a good morning. I got that done. Yes. Look at me. Like, I am so cool. Like, I'm smart. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then like an email pops up and it's like an escalation of somebody on our team. And it was something obvious. I don't remember the details. Mm-hmm. And it was just like an obvious thing. Either they sat on it for too long or they didn't pay attention. Mm-hmm. They didn't do it right. And then so, you know, I start picking up the phone. I have to call. And I'm like, what is happening? Let's go resolve it. After I kind of put out that little fire, which we get all the time as leaders. Mm-hmm. I'm like, Summer, like, you feeling great about what you did here like half an hour ago is nothing. When your team members mm-hmm. don't have the skill sets to be successful.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you are judged by the performance of your team members, right? So if your team members keep on messing up, it doesn't matter, right? Like, we were talking about this. If I say I'm a PM at heart and I just love putting a list together and I can run the project, things go. Yeah. But if my team of PMs, our team of PMs can't do that and they don't have the discipline or they don't have the skill set or the resources they need to be successful, and I end up in a situation where I'm constantly having to salvage projects, I should not be proud of how well I can run a project.
Yeah.
Right?
I love how you tied this to, it's like a book that many of us know, like The Phoenix Project. And you were saying they call it, this is the Brent effect, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. We all have a Brent. Brent is the person that solves all the problems, right? Mm-hmm. But the smarter the Brent gets, the more efficient, inefficient
The system right? is, yeah.
The system is, right? The smarter one person gets, the dumber this whole system gets. And nobody, as a leader, a true silent leader, nobody should be too, you know, proud of the fact that they're the only person that can do something. So like for our listeners, you know, something to think about is next time you personally receive kudos, somebody mm-hmm. said, hey, Sid, you really did a great job, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, you saved this project, right? I think Sid and the rest of the audience should think, well, could have somebody else mm-hmm. done this on my team, or would have been better if my team didn't need me to save them?
Yeah.
And how do I position my team to be successful with or without me, right?
Yeah, like, yeah. Your question is, I love that. Are you building a team that thrives without you, or one that relies on you too much? That's a good one.
Yeah.
The other bit, yeah, why I like this one too, it's kind of the other way I would phrase it. It's like you shifted your joy from Summer being personally successful to taking joy in watching other people being successful. And whether you got public praise or recognition for that, like those people that you helped, most of the time know that you helped them be successful, right? And so the joy is like in watching many, which also in many ways you think about it, like that magnifies your joy, right? Because if it's, yes. there's only so much you can do, but if, you yes. know, eight different people succeeding over the course of an hour and then doing that all day, that's 64 yes. different bits of joy that could happen versus just eight. So,
yeah. And there's nothing more rewarding because the rewards are bigger mm-hmm. at the end.
Yeah.
The projects are bigger. And I will say and maybe like I truly enjoy seeing other people be successful, right? Mm-hmm. Like if somebody on our team, you see tangible growth and you know, I have direct reports, right? Mm-hmm. And if one of the things I tell them a lot is I tend to talk over people in meetings because I just, my ideas come quicker.
Yeah.
And so I eventually have to tell my direct reports, hey, your goal is to say the ideas and lead the meeting before I say something. I'll try to step back.
Yep.
And then when I see them do that, I feel so much joy,
mm-hmm.
right? But for me, it's also almost like a negative motivator in the way that if our team doesn't mess up, I feel a lot more secure. Like I feel a lot more secure knowing my team our team has the skill set to be successful, mm-hmm. and I'm not going to get escalation.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to get away from both the positive and negative things, right? Mm-hmm. We want to do a good job, like just say it in our day jobs, right? We want to do a good job so that we can then get that good performance, you get a raise. We also want to do a good job so that we keep the income stream because we need to buy groceries and pay our bills, right? So there's both motivations are true, and yeah. it's important to acknowledge both sides of it, right? So,
yes, I joke with people. I don't necessarily, we don't want to look good.
Yeah.
Like we don't want to be the best looking team. We just don't want to be the worst looking team. And it just depends. It's not as motivating,
yeah.
but it depends on everybody's individual motivators.
Yeah.
And I think my motivator on that front is much more of a fear of the team looking bad.
Yeah.
Than the need for the team to look the best.
Yeah. And it's, everybody's got to figure out what works for them, right?
Okay.
So it's, everybody's got different motivations. And so yeah. it's an alignment on the motivations.
Yeah. And which is interesting, Sid, I think, because then you have the opposite motivation. It's obvious your motivation is more seeing people successful and getting more joy,
mm-hmm.
right? So, yeah, it's an interesting kind of different points of view.
It
yeah.
is. It's when you're saying that, I have loved. So when we first met, I was at a different consulting company. One of the things that I yeah. love right now, and this is the perspective of gray hair and time, but like looking at all the people that were on my old team there and just looking at, oh my gosh, you've got this director level position over here and you're doing, it's like awesome to just, it's so much fun. I love it. So it's, I have that same feeling like as a parent watching, they're not my kids. I can't take credit for how they're good humans, but yeah. I can look and say, okay, I did have some influence on their career and what they're doing. And that to me is really cool.
Yes, absolutely.
So your third point, there's a, obviously a lot of these relate to, and there's tons of overlap, but then success and failure doesn't depend on you alone. You had a before Summer went through the heroine's journey and transformed and had the epiphany, and then you have the after. So what does this point mean to you? Walk us through that.
So this point came to me from a mentor of mine, which on the point of seeing people grow and taking part of it, this mentor I used to work with, and I'm good friends with many people who work in that company, and seeing their journey of growth, right? And really, I do see a lot of joy in that, in saying that. And I played a small part in all the kind of coming together and working in that company. Oh, cool. So, and so, yeah, you know, I actually went on vacation with them in the Bahamas like 2 weeks ago.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And then to see them together and being successful together, I totally can relate.
Yeah.
So I was in the middle of, I think, oh my gosh, 12, 13 months ago, of salvaging a very, very large project. And I call it a crybaby project. It's one of those projects you come to this point and you're like, I'm not sure like how I got this crybaby and how it's crying so much, but all I know is I birthed it, fed it, you know, like I'm walking it, I'm not sleeping at night, and it is still crying.
Yeah.
Right. And relating to a project wise, it's like, you know, I'm working with the vendor, I'm working with the team, we're trying to get the schedule under control, I'm controlling the scope, I'm working the stakeholders, but every day this project is like about to fall off the cliff and we cannot salvage it. So I was in high stress mode and I was on my way to work and I called my mentor and I was just like, I don't know what to do. I'm done. Like this, just, I'm done. I've got 50 risks and got no solutions. Right. And I was just rattling. And he goes, calm down, calm down. I was like, what? And he goes, Summer, the success or failure of this project is not going to depend on you alone. And like I instantaneously, like, I just felt like I could breathe, like, because I couldn't breathe, like, while I was talking to him because I was so, strong. And he goes, it's not going to depend on you alone. This is a large project. Do you have a team? Is there a team? I said, no, we have a great team. We have a great team. We're working out some stuff, but they're great people on that team. He goes, you got to trust those people. And you have to go back to your PM basics. You have risks, resolve them. You don't have a schedule? Have the team put it together, right? Like, I was like, oh, that's so obvious. He goes, but more importantly, you know, it doesn't depend on you alone. Lean on other people. And it was right. Like, we salvaged that project. We're back on track now. You know, it's still a little bit of a cry. Now I went from a crybaby project to, I will say, a fussy baby project. You still can't take your eyes off the baby. Like, you turn around and still just whining, complaining, and you're just like, okay, but it's not like falling off the cliff. So, but that moment was pivotal to me because it was like a trust fall exercise. I went back to the team. I said, we're going to get this. We're going to get it fixed, y'all. Right? Like, and here was my key. Not that I trusted everyone on the team, because the team was like 15 people, right? I don't know everyone like that. I started to really pick out a core group of 4 or 5 people that I'm like, these people are highly competent. We need to bring everybody together and work together and have everybody put their best feet forward. And we end up salvaging it. And so I give this piece of advice, this quote, to everyone who I call like overachieving perfectionists, right? If I have a PM that calls me in the morning and says, hey, Summer, I've been thinking about this last night. I'm like, hold on. Hold on. It's a thigh. You're an overachieving perfectionist. Let's take a breather and say, hey, the success of failure doesn't depend on you alone. And we go back to some of the previous techniques and the insights we talk about. How do we ask better questions? How do we facilitate instead of provide all the solutions? And how do we tell ourselves the success and failure of this project doesn't depend on you alone?
Yeah, it's... And again, the point here I see too is it's how do you create that space, right? Just like on the first point, you create the space for other people to have ideas. Here, you create space both for ideas, for other leaders to lead, and then, and to a point too, is also for people to try and then potentially fail. Because like you're saying, one of the first things was like calming down to realize this is a shared responsibility with the team. Because I think something, a hard lesson I had to learn in some of my early days in leading teams is that when people can pick up on your anxiety and your own, then they magnify that anxiety that you have, right? Uh-huh. And then their fear of making the wrong choice amplifies. And so then it actually impedes like growth and it impedes progress because then they're second guessing everything that they do. So
to play on that is I was just thinking about it this morning. As a leader, you set the tone. Mm-hmm. You set the tone of the whole environment. And so the CIO who I worked for, Lisa Kitt, recommended us mm-hmm. a great book called The Happiness Advantage. Mm-hmm. And in the core of that book, it really, people think success brings happiness, right? Yeah. Success is the sun and happiness is the earth. But in the field of positive psychology, which is what this book is based mm-hmm. on, actually, happiness brings success.
Mm-hmm.
So people who are more positive thinking, mm-hmm. who bring a happiness tone to their work in the environment, tend to be more successful.
Yeah.
So actually, happiness is the sun and success is the earth. Mm-hmm. So just like what you're talking about, right? Like as a leader, if you bring that anxiety, right, people pick up on that. Mm-hmm. But if you bring the positivity, they pick up on it. Mm-hmm. And circling back to the book, more likely to be successful. Now, I am just like everything in this podcast. I'm still learning. By no means have mastered any of these skill sets.
Yeah.
And even the happiness advantage, the more cynical part of me was like, well, let's give that a try. We'll see.
Yeah.
I'll try to be happy and see what happens.
You know, the thing, it's funny that you mentioned it. So quick sidebar on tangent on that. One shift I went through over time is like in high school, college, my mindset was like, oh, if it's something that's been published, then they're definitely right because people vetted these books. I had this like really, I don't even know where I got it from, but I had this idea that if something was published, that the author did a lot of care in writing the book, that the publisher did a lot of review to make sure that this was good material, that industry experts had opinions on this before it was published. And that was Sid's early naive viewpoint on publishing. So then when I started reading books, it's like, oh my gosh, this is really good stuff. And it took me a while to realize sometimes there's just some things that get published that shouldn't have been published. So I haven't fully I read with a more critical eye these days. And so I look at it's like happiness. And so my first thought is, okay, I see that. Like I generally view myself as a very positive person and that's been a lot of my success. But I also, and I'm sure the book covers part of this, is that there has to be authenticity to it. Otherwise people just smell that BS a mile away. Yeah. Yeah. And you have.
It's more like a positive mindset. But Sid, I was like you. I mean, like growing up in the Asian culture, you don't question authority. Mm-hmm. You don't question expertise. Mm-hmm. Like critical thinking is not one of those things we're taught.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Yeah. I used to think if somebody published a book mm-hmm. and like I listened to Audible. So I'm like reading self-help books. I'm like, you know, they published it, you know, and they made an Audible.
Yeah.
This must be true. Yeah. Like the older I get, I'm like.
Yes.
Yeah. Must it be true?
Yes.
I'm going to believe it. I'm going to give it a try.
So nowadays when I look at books, particularly business books or other things, then I will read the behind the scenes. Hey, mm-hmm. where did this person, what's their background? Do they have the experience qualified to write this thing? I care less about the education. It's more, do you have the experience for the thing that, depending on the topic, sometimes education is important, right? So.
Yeah.
If you're going to write about health, I do want to know that you have some pedigree in that.
For sure. But,
all right. So now on in this shift, so success, point number three, success and failure doesn't depend on you alone. There was a moment then when you called your mentor, that blends into the fourth point, which is leadership is psychology. I think that's a underrepresented part. I think a lot of people know psychology is important in leadership. I think a lot of people struggle with how to do that in the workplace.
Yeah.
But you have a particular angle on like leadership is psychology. So what is your angle here? What did you want? What's the insight Summer's going to drop?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I used to joke, you know, I have a PMP, which is a project management professional. Mm-hmm. It's more like a psychologist managing problems. Mm-hmm. My PMP is out. My angle is this one, right? Like, okay, leadership's a psychology, so why topic? And it's like, yeah, I kind of get it, but how do I put it in practice? One of the things that I really thought about, one of the things we do more and more now is problems need RCA too, right? RCA root cause analysis, mm-hmm. right? Like, when we have a major incident on our systems, right? Like, our first thing after resolving it is, you know, putting out a major incident report, mm-hmm. right? An MRI, MIR, whatever. And the number one thing in that is finding the root cause.
Yeah.
Because you're like, hey, if your server is down, you don't know if it's a bad patch mm-hmm. or hardware failed. You're not going to fix it. You're not going to, even if you brought it back up, as technologists, we all know, if we don't know what really went wrong, mm-hmm. it's going to happen
yep.
again.
Yep.
So people problems take the same analysis, mm-hmm. right? It is core. I'll give an example of somebody on my team. He has this tendency, and he's a leader on the team. And, you know, we have a ton of administrative activities at the city.
Yeah.
Now, working for the government, it's just part of the, you know, sometimes we need to do it, sometimes we don't. But whatever it is, I'm a rule follower. I do it. I get it over with. But it's not the easiest thing to keep up with it a lot of times. We have a leader on our team that constantly falls behind on these administrative activities. And we'd send follow-up after follow-up. We'd say, hey, you have to do it. Why aren't you doing mm-hmm. it? The deadline's coming up. This happened for a while until I'm like, hold on. Like, you know, all the reminders are not working. We're asking, are you putting on the to-do list? We're prescribing very symptom, like we're treating the symptoms. One day I just sat down and said, wife, like, why? Mm-hmm. Why are you doing this? Why can't you do these things? They don't have anything to do with your skill set.
Yeah.
I'm like, just go to the box. Make sure your people check the box. He just said, you know, I got way too comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, it happens all the time.
Yeah.
You know, they're important, but I just feel like even if we slip the deadline way more time, I'm like, no, that's not it. Right? Like, you can't. And he's like, I won't get comfortable anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it was drastic. After that conversation, he was on top of his things, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the root cause analysis. But if it took us months, a month to get to that point. Mm-hmm. It took one conversation for him to say, I know what's going on. I got too comfortable, right?
Mm-hmm.
My personal story on that root cause analysis is I had the hardest time giving feedback mm-hmm. to people on my team.
Yeah.
And that, like, a giving and receiving feedback, it's one of the core leadership competencies.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't be honest with somebody where they're doing good
mm-hmm.
and where they need growth, that person can't grow.
Yeah.
Right. And I knew I had that problem. So I talked to everyone. I had coaches. I talked to my boss, and everybody was like, here's all the things you can do. They're giving me treatments,
mm-hmm.
right? Oh, you can be prepared. You can write it down.
Yeah.
You can say it. You can ask questions. And I just could not do it until one day, my boss, the CIO of the city, gave me feedback on something. She was very direct.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a big deal. But man, I felt so bad. Like, there was so much shame
mm-hmm.
and disappointment and fear associated to receiving that piece of feedback. It suddenly dawned on me, I can't give feedback to other people because I see it as a negative activity. And then I told myself, other people may not see it as a negative activity. Other people may welcome feedback. That's just my reaction to it. That was my root cause, right? My root cause was, I cannot provide feedback to other because I viewed it as a very negative thing.
Yeah.
Right. And then from that point on, I still struggle with this one. I will say this. I still struggle with it a lot. But some days my team are like, I can't tell you're struggling. You're a little too honest. Still struggle with it. Yeah.
We are never going to be, awareness is the first step.
Yeah.
And then working towards it is parts of the ensuing steps. We're never going to be the best at it.
No. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So now your last one. So we go, leadership is psychology. Now we're, leadership is theater.
Uh-huh.
And I love that point because I've got personal attachments to theater, having been a theater nerd in middle school and everything. But what, so I don't want to overscribe my own thoughts to this. What does this mean for you? Why did you draw this theater analogy to leadership?
Yes. Yeah. Well, a little bit sidebar, Steve. Mm-hmm. I have known, which people doesn't think like theater is one of those performance things. I have known more theater nerds who turned out to be IT nerds than I thought I would.
Yeah.
Like I probably, or, you know, tax accounting nerds, or like people who end up in very professional situations that doesn't relate to what you think as performance. Like you're like the third one. And I was like,
yep.
Like don't ever think IT or something really technical is connected to theater, but there's a performance aspect and people can do different things, right?
It is. Well, and also the other one too, is you see a lot of IT and the developers and others that are musicians as well. So there's a heavy overlap. Now, again, this is observation bias because these are the people that I see all the time, right?
So, that's
yeah.
Right.
So I'm finding the evidence because I'm tuned to see it, right?
Yeah. So just the interesting tidbit. Leadership is theater in that when you're an individual contributor, mm-hmm. you play one role. Like if yeah. you're the actor, you're in the spotlight, you read the script, you do it, right? Yeah. If you're an individual contributor, let's say you're the sound person, right? You control the soundboard, right? Leadership is theater in that if you're a leader, mm-hmm. your job is to actually make sure the sound person has the equipment, the main character has their script, the custom designers, you know, have supplies bought for them. Mm-hmm. Your job is to make sure that there is a stage, mm-hmm. their audiences,
yeah,
right? That the whole production is successful.
Mm.
And so you have to stand at a higher level and sometimes and identify the gaps
yeah.
of where they are. And some days, yes, when there's not a performer on the stage, you may have to hop up there and be in the stop spotlight and say, we're going to get this production done, yeah. but I have to be the one performing. I have to be one performing. But most of the days, you can't because you may not be the sound guy. Yeah. You may not know the sound guy, right? You may not know how to control sound. Yeah. And you have to have those plans to make sure that if something happens to the sound guy, you have plan A and plan B. It's making sure the show goes on.
Yeah.
In whatever format and way. And that's why I think leadership is theater, right? And I learned this from a friend who once introduced herself as a stage maker. She said, you know, my proudest moments, you know, she was putting together like a panel talk. And she said, my proudest achievement today is getting these people in the room because I'm a stage maker.
Mm.
And I was like, wow. Right. Like I want to be a stage maker. I want to be a bridge builder.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yep.
And the other reason I love this analogy is that one, it's very tangible and real. So when we talk about projects, IT projects, sometimes leadership, it can just feel hard to grasp. Like I'm jello to a tree or trying to hug fog. So these things are not easy to do.
Yeah.
But when you sit there and picture, then it really brings home a lot of the other points. If I have a three-act play with 10 actors in it, like you can't go fill all the roles. You can't pull the curtain. You can't jump on the stage. You can't do the lighting. You can't do the sound. Now, if some of those people are underperforming or just they went missing or something like that, then it's a leader's call not to go fill that role, but to figure out how to adapt the play so that it can, as you said, the show must go on. Maybe we're not going to have the best lighting and the lights are just going to be static the whole time. And so we won't have the dramatic thunder effect. But it's your job to then give, okay, hey, we're not going to have this not neat lighting effect for the thunder and for the lightning, but you need to act it out and you're going to be more dramatic about it because of this, right? So you can give all those things. The leader's job is in the face of all of these circumstances that happen, because they will happen, right?
Oh, yes.
They will absolutely happen. But you have to make those calls, right? And
and make those decisions. That's right, Sid, right? Like, you just have to say, it's not going to be perfect, but showtime's here.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Yep. And the funny thing is that sometimes it's like those imperfections that actually mean the most to people, because it's like this shared experience. Are you there when they didn't have this? That was so cool, right? That happened. Sometimes if you're good at leading and creative, you can make those like magical moments happen, because then people revel sometimes in that imperfection. So
yeah, it's almost like, could you believe we went live?
Yeah, I know. Nobody died. So
we did go live.
Yeah. So. So, all right. So love that last one. Now you've got, you know, five key actions. So five, and then the summary of your five key shifts. So walk us through those. What's that challenge we're putting out there for everybody?
Okay. To summarize the five key shifts, one is from doer to facilitator, mm-hmm. right? Two is doer to facilitator is really, I don't have solutions. I got problems.
Yeah. That should be an easy one for us. I got lots of problems.
Yeah. I got problems. Let's solve it together. Two is how to be team focused instead of self focused, mm-hmm. right? And for me to remember that is you're judged by the performance of your team, mm-hmm. not you, yep. right? Three is the success or failure of this project does not depend on you.
Yeah.
Do that trust call exercise, trust others,
yep.
and they work that out, right? And four is people problems need root cause analysis too.
Yeah.
You know, the therapist is always trying to go back to your childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And people problems always have a root cause,
yeah.
just like technical problems, right?
Yep.
And the fifth one is from spotlight to stage builder, right? Leadership is theater,
yeah.
right? The show must go on, even though this is not perfect. That's instead of that one. That I'm going to go and say, can you believe the show's going on? We went live no matter what.
Yep.
And I have some thought-provoking questions for our audience,
okay.
right? Are you, first of all, building a team that is too dependent on you, or can they be successful without you, right? When you look at people on your team, do they have the skill set that's needed to be successful, right? And what are you doing to position them to be successful, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how are you giving them the spotlight and preparing for them to be the main act of the show, right?
Mm-hmm.
And are you playing the right role in your own leadership journey? And what is that?
Yeah.
Right? So that's my three takeaways for the audience to consider.
Awesome. Summer, it was fantastic having you on today. Appreciate you taking time out of your schedule. Obviously, it's a very big city to go help and manage. So we know that your time is valuable, and we love that you took some time to spend with us today.
Yeah. And thank you, Sid, for putting together this wonderful podcast. I look forward to listening to it. And last bit, shout out is I want to shout out to all the we's at the city,
yep.
right? Like that goes back to nothing can happen in this city without the we's. And our team members and, you know, my great peers in the leadership team, I want to end with that. And so we were preparing and doing this kind of AI generated podcast thing to see how we are out, right? There was one very good takeaway that they ended their podcast with, that people often say that leadership is a journey.
Mm-hmm.
The journey is more fun if you do it with the team and there are others involved.
Yes, I couldn't agree more on that.
That's right.
Awesome. Thank you again, Summer.
All right. Thank you, Sin. You have a good one.
Too.